Hey Brian, hey Rick, Shooter McGavin here on a Masters weekend, day two. Wow. So I heard your From the Tips podcast is kind of badass.
What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of From the Tips Masters Reaction Edition. Welcome to it. It is me, your boy Brian, always joined by my fantastic co-host, Rick Landis. How we doing, good buddy? The Masters has happened. It was intense. There's a bunch to talk about. How we feeling?
I'm feeling all right. In general, good about the Masters. Okay. There was a lot of interesting things that happened, to say the least. I watched as much as I could of it, which unfortunately was not too much because I had a lot of plans this weekend, of course, on Masters Week. But I watched as much as I could, and the stuff I did see was awesome. The rain did not help with me being able to watch things because that kind of pushed everything back into where I had plans around it already. So
yeah, let me guess. Every time you had availability to watch, it was like, and play suspended.
Pretty much. Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And then it was like, okay, I got to go do something. It was like, all right, play's back on. I'm like, oh, awesome. Wonderful. So we had a picnic for Easter. I watched a little bit of it there. It was mostly the beginning of the last round. And then I watched the end of the last round at another Easter thing that I had. So I did get to see a good chunk of the last round, at least.
That's good. I mean, everybody obviously wants to watch the last round mostly anyways. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was definitely an interesting Masters with, you know, classic rain during the Masters. That's always going to happen. But the fact that we went into back-to-back days of there being suspension and the third round getting suspended pretty much in its entirety, at least before the big groups went out. And I think I have the hours here. Yeah, they had there were multiple stoppages in play and a 29-hole marathon on Sunday. So 29 holes got played on Sunday in total. So it was a very weird Masters, and it kind of showed with the golf that was being played. A lot of names in the top of the leaderboard that were not even being discussed at the end of the third round on Sunday. So yeah, that is something that we're going to react to, obviously. But look, Masters, you gotta love it. It was a fantastic tournament. John Rahm coming out on top, that is something that we will get into. Just an absolute masterclass from the Spicy Spaniard himself. But arguably, and I don't know if you completely agree with me, I would say the stories are away from John Rahm. Like, obviously the story is always going to be around the guy who puts the green jacket on at the end of Sunday, but I think a lot of the stories are elsewhere about this Masters. But we'll talk about all of them, obviously. Uh-huh. But first and foremost, as we do with every From the Tips episode, even the Masters reaction episode, what happened today in sports history, Rick? What transpired in our past?
Well, obviously we have the Masters tournament around this time of year, and it finishes on different days every year. So in 1965, we had the 25th Masters. Do you know who won the 25th Masters?
The 25th Masters.
29th, sorry. This was 1965, if that helps.
Arnold Palmer.
I mean, he was up there. It was actually Jack Nicklaus. He won his second of six with a tournament record 271 total strokes. And he beat Gary Player and Arnold Palmer by 9 strokes.
He beat the alcohol. He beat an alcoholic beverage and a commercial screaming guy to win a Masters? That's crazy.
And then you know what happened the next year at the Masters on the same day?
Did he do it again?
Jack Nicklaus won. He became the first back-to-back champion, winning an 18-hole Monday playoff.
Well, how about it, huh?
18-hole Monday playoff.
18. Is that when they played 18 for a playoff, though? Is that when, like, the playoff was a full round?
Yeah.
Because I remember that being a thing.
Could you imagine?
Which, by the way, yeah, oh my God. I was going to say, by the way, huge kudos to professional golf for just scrapping that idea. And it's a
oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, could you imagine you playing your heart out on Sunday and having a tie and being like, well, that was one hell of a round. Do it again tomorrow, you know? Like, oh.
Yeah.
God, it's exhausting. I don't know if I could do it. I don't know.
No, I definitely could not. I mean, just think about going on a golf trip. Like, how you feel at the end of 3 days, let alone 4 days plus an 18-hole playoff. No thanks.
Right. Like, I mean, we obviously are not professional athletes, so me complaining about my body soreness is a bit different than a professional. But, yeah, you got to be sore after four rounds. I'm assuming in order to get into the playoff, that Sunday had to be pretty mentally stressful as well, not just physically taxing. Then you got to turn around and do another 18. Kudos to professional golf to just say, to hell with that. We're just going to go sudden death the day of. We're having a winner by the end of Sunday. I think that's probably the best move they could have made when it comes to that.
Yeah, I think they would definitely lose a lot of people if they had a whole other 18 holes for the playoff.
No one would watch. It's a Monday. No one's watching that.
Yeah, it's tough. And then I got one more thing, which I think is just really cool. So we're gonna go for it. 1989. Okay, you actually might know this one. There's a playoff game.
Okay.
Involving a Philadelphia hockey team.
Okay. Yeah.
And history was made this day. Do you know what it was?
Is this the Ron Hextall goal?
It is the Ron Hextall goal. It's the first ever playoff goal scored by a goalie. Scored by
Ron. Got him good. Some of the pointless knowledge I possess should be studied.
I mean, Flyers make sense because you're a big hockey guy.
That's
so
true.
I figured
true.
You would have a good shot at getting that one.
Yeah, my buddy was at the Easter game against the Bruins, which, you know, the Bruins broke the all-time season wins record with
62. Yeah, we don't need to talk about that.
David Pastrnak got a hat trick, I think, to beat some other record or whatever. And, you know, he's a Bruins fan, my buddy, unfortunately. So he sends me a picture of the news afterwards where he was on the news. Sends me a photo acting like I'm going to be so offended that there was more Bruins fans in attendance than there were Flyers fans. Look, if there was more Flyers fans in attendance for that game, I think I'd be more shocked.
Yeah, definitely.
Way more surprised.
Especially the way things are going this year.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't there still like a handful of games left too?
That's right, folks. The pain is not over. The season still continues on. I believe, is it the end of this week? It might be. I think.
Looks like they have two games left.
This week. Yeah. Yep. The pain continues. We are just going to.
And they are playing the Capitals and the Canadiens, who neither of which have winning records. So there's a good chance.
Have you ever thought to yourself?
Three game beat.
100%. Have you ever thought to yourself? When it comes to teams that are just so out of it, right? You have no chance to make the playoffs and you're playing other teams that have no chance to make the playoffs. Do you just say fuck it and don't show up? Right? What if one of your star guys, one of your clearly few, but one of your star guys gets hurt in one of those games and is out for an extended period of time the next season? That's just a risk you don't like. For example, Alex Ovechkin is currently chasing down the goals number that Wayne Gretzky has set. Now it's the only one he's going to be able to achieve because the fact that Wayne Gretzky has so many assists, it is an impossible number to reach. I don't know if anybody will ever be able to do it again. But the goals number is in the wheelhouse of Alex Ovechkin. He could do it. And he's chasing it down. But could you imagine if he gets hurt in a game that means nothing against the Flyers at the end of the 2023 season, I'd be mad. I'd be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, that's the greatest goal scorer of my generation of hockey. I want to see him make that record. And, of course, it would be the dumbass Philadelphia Flyers that would injure him because they're stupid. That's exactly what would happen. You can almost guarantee it and chalk it up to a 100% guarantee. But I'm happy that I do have that pointless bit of knowledge. That's fun for me. About the 1989 Flyers. Believe that team got to the Stanley Cup Finals and lost to Edmonton. 1989 Stanley Cup Finals. No, this one was between Calgary and Montreal. So an all Canada Stanley Cup. Get yourself some of that.
Wasn't it the 90s that they started going to the playoffs a lot and winning?
Yeah, and then started meeting the Oilers and getting just smacked around. Yeah, the 80s were when the Islanders were actually the biggest powerhouse team that there was in the decade. Every time the Flyers made a Stanley Cup, they ran into a monster. In the 80s, it was the Islanders. In the 90s, it was the Oilers. And in the 10s, it was the Chicago Blackhawks, and we haven't been back since. So
here's a fun little question that I'm going to ask you now, and hopefully people going to yell at you in their cars while they're listening. When do you think the next time the Flyers see the Stanley Cup is? When do you think the next time they win the conferences and they see the Stanley Cup?
Oh, like they just make it there in general? They don't have
to just make it there. I'm not saying winning because I don't know if we're going to see that, to be completely honest, with how things are going. But
I'm going to say they have the best chance in the year 2028.
Any specific reason or?
Mostly because I think
five more years.
Just on average, I would say any like well put together NHL rebuild, which obviously it probably won't be, but I'm just going to go with the averages, right? On average, it takes about 5 years from a team to go from the basement to relevancy, right? I mean, most teams, especially recently, have been able to do it in a span of 3 to 5 years. You got your Dallas Stars. You could argue the Buffalo Sabres now. You got your Carolina Hurricanes. Teams that have been bad in the last 5 to 6 years who are good now, there's a bunch of them. It's possible in that time frame. So I'm just going to really hold on to that and hope that that's how it goes. You got new ownership? That's cool. Trust the process is back. I mean, it's a Philly thing, baby, right? You know, actually, the Flyers might be the only example of what isn't a Philly thing. They just didn't make the championship to begin with. They were like, hey, we're not going to disappoint you from the gate.
We don't want to give you any hope whatsoever. We're not even going to give you a good pick this year. We're not even going to give you the hope of a good pick. We're just going to be as mediocre as possible, and no one's going to care about us. That's the plan.
It's incredible how they're like, when you watch them, you're like, wow, this is a really bad hockey team. They must be the worst. No, they're the seventh worst. That's right. It gets worse, and by a handful of teams, I might add.
Yeah.
Seven? So, yeah, they got no chance in the lottery because the lottery system is, you know, whatever. But, hey, I digress. What I did want to share with our listeners, as it was Easter over the last weekend during the Masters, is there was a little fun little tidbit that my grandmother shared with us at Easter dinner. And I just thought, if I have to hold this knowledge, everybody else should have to as well. So tulips are I wouldn't say famous, but they're around mostly around the springtime. Tulips mm-hmm. are a nice little flower. And what you do, unfortunately, is because tulips bloom only so often. They're not a long bloom flower. They'll sometimes bloom and then go back and then die. In order to keep that from happening, what you'll do is you'll slit the throat of the flower right below the nice little flower, so that it doesn't get enough water so that it blooms slower. So basically what you do in order for this flower to look prettier longer is you let it die slowly.
That's just so dark.
Is it not the darkest thing you've ever heard? I can't wait to take this knowledge to my second job at Lowe's and really start disturbing some people. I'm going to be like, you know what you want to do? Slit its throat.
You know how disturbed any vegetarians listening right now are?
Right? Like, what?
Torturing plants? Unbelievable.
I think the reason that it really just made me uneasy was how happy my grandmother was to show us what it looked like, this little throat for a tulip. She was like, yeah, let me show you real quick.
You did it in front of you?
Multiple times. That's did it to a bunch of them. Yeah. She just took him by the head and she was like, you can use a knife, but I have long nails, so I just use my nails. And I was like, oh, so you just have a natural ability to do this without tools. Great, great. You have clearly evolved more than most humans. So disturbing. Yes, but if you have tulips in your house, I would like to remind you to please go slit their throats so they die slower and look prettier longer. That is what I will leave you with. Happy Easter, folks. It was Masters weekend, though, this last weekend. We are obviously going to talk about it. The big news being Jon Rahm is the winner. He put on an absolute masterclass. He was pretty much in contention the entire way. The only reason that he didn't really, like, sprint away with it was the first day four-putt on the first hole.
Mm-hmm.
That was, like, the only reason that he didn't win by, like, more than five strokes. And we'll get into – we'll basically get into his win at the end of talking about the Masters here, because I think there's bigger news to unpack than just that. But one story that I found out – well, not that I found out, but we found out during his post-round press conference on the Greens 18 was that good friend of his and former Eagles tight end and Super Bowl winner, Zach Ertz, apparently a good friend of Jon Rahm's, texted him before his first round while he was practicing, and he went, "The first green looks easy today." Hilarious. I love that a Philadelphia athlete jinxed a professional golfer. That's so good to me. That's a chef's kiss moment for any Philadelphian who knows anything about Philadelphia sports. But we'll talk about the Jon Rahm win kind of at the end of when we talk about the Masters. But first and foremost, I want to start this huge Masters conversation we're about to have with Masters.com and how they do the app and the website. I think they killed it. It was almost the only complaint I have is that you couldn't pick your featured group. Like, they chose the featured group for you. Because I do think the fact that the featured group on round four Sunday wasn't Jon Rahm, Brooks Koepka, and Sam Bennett is a bit of a crime.
Yeah, it was a weird group. It was Cantlay, wasn't it? It was like Cantlay and Burns and then Spieth and someone else.
Yeah, it was a very strange set for the featured groups. Now, obviously, I think it was because of the schedule changes that happened. You can't really make up for that, sure. But when you know, when you have a full 24 hours to adapt and overcome because the last day got suspended almost in its entirety, you should have the foresight to be like, okay, we'll just have to adapt and we're going to make the last group, obviously, the featured group, because why wouldn't you do that?
Yeah,
that's probably my only complaint, because obviously if you want to watch that group, you'll get the majority of the viewing of that group on the broadcast view, which was also available on Masters.com and through the app. So you had to go to a different window. I just think the feature group being that group would have made more sense to me, because I would have, I'm not saying I didn't enjoy watching the rest of the tournament through the broadcast, but like, because it gave you the option to have four different viewing windows, I would have just did the side by side.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's kind of weird that they wouldn't do the top two guys as the featured group. At least one of them. Yeah. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, you would think that that would be something that they'd think of, but, you know, I digress. But I want to ask you, I thought that Masters.com and the Masters app were run as perfect as they could have been. I don't know how often you got to go on those to watch, but I pretty much did all of my watching on Thursday and Friday through Masters.com and the Masters app, and I thought it was perfect.
Yeah, unfortunately, my work doesn't allow me to watch during the day, which I wish it did. But I don't really get the opportunity to use the app all that much because of that, because I get home and then I have a TV, so I'm like, why would I watch it on the app when I have a TV?
Good point.
I heard really good things about it, that it made a lot of improvements from years past. So that I can say. As far as my own opinions, I don't really have any, because like I said, every opportunity I got to watch it, I was near TV. Otherwise, I was not able to tune in. So,
right.
But you said it was good. I heard they had like a group watch feature. Was that a thing?
Yeah. On that? Yeah. So you could set up. You had the most windows you could watch at once was four. But also, you could watch the same web page with your friends at other computers. I didn't need to use it because obviously I work in tech, so everybody had a computer.
Yeah.
But like, you had the ability to watch the same thing with other computers that, you know, you weren't near or something like that. So that ability and the flexibility they gave you for viewing and having pretty much the entire golf course covered for cameras wise, you know, they had the featured group, they had the broadcast that went on at 3 o'clock. They had holes 2, 3, and 4. They had Amen Corner. They had the last three holes as well, all televised. And I think one of the coolest bits was, obviously, your regular television broadcast on any given golf tournament, you can't follow every single shot from a player. The Masters said, to hell with it, we're going to let you follow every single shot from a player if you want to. Yeah. On Thursday, I decided to just follow every single one of Shane Lowry's shots.
Because why not?
And it was almost seamless. It was perfect. So every time that the shot... So it kind of came through almost like a social media kind of like posting almost. So like every shot would happen and then there would be, you know, a couple minutes delay in between shots because they got to get the footage, upload the footage onto the app and the website, et cetera. And then it would pop up and it was like, boom, there's his next shot. Then you wait a couple minutes and then boom, there's his next shot. Finishes out the hole. That's cool. To see every single one of anybody's shots. They were doing it. You could watch Fred Couples all day if you wanted to.
Which wouldn't have been the worst thing, apparently.
apparently Freddie showed up this year. We're going to talk about that, but you know, hey, good for the couples. But it was just, I thought it was done so well, and it was so cool to see because obviously the Masters is weird. They don't let people have their phones on site, so you're not going to get a lot of content through Twitter or through your social media people and stuff like that. And they only give the rights to CBS. And other than that, the only way you can watch it is Masters.com and the Masters app.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just doing it so well that they're making it not a problem. Like, usually if I'm told the only way I can watch a sport or a sporting event or something that I want to watch is either you can watch the last part of it from 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. or you have to go on the specific website to watch it during the rest of the day. I'd be like, well, I hate that, to be honest with you. That sounds terrible.
I'm not going to watch a good amount of that.
Exactly. But just the fact that they did it so well and gave you so many options on how to watch the Masters, I think is why you're almost never going to get a complaint about how the Masters, you know, takes care of their business there.
Yeah.
Not only are you not going to get a complaint, but I got to tell you, some of the stories from the payphones are hilarious. Because obviously you're not allowed to have your cell phone on site. You have to put it in a locker before you enter the I guess you could consider the golden gates of the Augusta National Golf Course. So the only way to contact people on the outside is a payphone. They have payphones all over, which is hilarious. And some of the stories from people on the phone on the payphones are so funny. There was the one I saw, somebody said that they overheard a conversation on the payphone where the guy was like, yeah, my wife saw the $500 charge and I can't remove it because I can't access my cell phone. Can you do it? You're my best buddy. And that's really funny.
That's awesome.
And that's the kind of stuff that makes the Masters. And I think that just the way the website was run was awesome. To keep moving forward here, rain. You could arguably say the entire story of the second and third round was rain.
Yeah.
Thursday was gorgeous. Right. It was a gorgeous day. It was a beautiful Savannah, Georgia day. Right.
Seamless.
Friday, Saturday sucked. And it defined a lot of people's rounds. I would go out of my way to say there were some guys in the mix early that probably with how they were playing could have stayed in the mix had they not had to play most of their second round and some of their third round, even some of them. In the rain, I think they probably could have stayed in contention. Now, obviously, you don't want to get professional athletes.
Yeah, you got to be able to do it. But specifically, the one that comes to mind is JT because he absolutely fell apart once it started raining.
100%.
He missed the cut by one stroke, I think. So, if it didn't rain, I think there's a good chance that we see JT continuing to be in contention throughout the rest of the tournament. But that's also part of the reason that it's really exciting when we see weather like this because we see guys that we don't expect. We see Phil Mickelson at, what is he, 52 now, getting tied for second at the Masters. Like, no one expected that. I guarantee, we talked about all the live guys and them being in the top 10, top 25. We never once mentioned Phil Mickelson as one of those people.
Not once.
Yeah. So, it was really cool to see the weather and how it affected certain people's rounds. And you felt for JT if you were watching because it was tough.
100%. I mean, definitely a guy that you want to pull for too, but obviously someone affected by the weather, much like a lot of the field. He's, you know, he's human, as are most of the other guys. But I'm glad you brought up Phil Mickelson, because nobody was talking about him. The only time we would talk about him is when we were talking about the majority of LIV players. His name would just come up when you were talking about it. And it's a good time to segue into that. The LIV players, I'll tell you what, they kind of showed up and showed out, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. A lot better than I think we thought they would. Also, Cave just crushed that thing.
Just absolutely nuked it.
Oh.
What a homer.
Sorry for the sidetrack there, but I just watched the replay and just nuked it. But definitely a lot better than I think almost everybody probably expected them to play. And we did see kind of how the whole 3-day thing affects them with how it finished out. But at the same time, they were still all up there. They were all still super competitive. And it was kind of cool to see, to be honest with you. I kind of enjoyed watching them just kind of wreak havoc, because you know it was getting in the heads of the PGA Tour guys. And that might be part of the reason that some of them did as poorly as they did, because they saw the LIV guys climbing up.
Oh, 100%. I really, truly feel like at least some of the PGA guys, it probably got in their head a little bit, right? So 12 of 18 of them made the cut. So you didn't even get rid of a majority at the cut line, right? You actually still had a majority of them playing through the cut. And not only that, but I believe, if I'm not mistaken, yes. Yeah, so Phil Mickelson, Brooks Koepka, Patrick Reed were all in the top 10, all LIV guys. And I believe six LIV guys were in the top 25, which is ridiculous. Because of how we went into this being like, oh, they're going to get dominated by this course. Like, the LIV guys have no chance at all. Hand up, hand to God. We were in on that storyline. We were like, look, they're going to get dominated by the course. Yep. They have no chance at all. They're basically screwed. And we were proven wrong. Look, this kind of goes to show the best golfers will remain the best golfers, right?
Yeah.
No matter where they are, where they're playing, how much they're playing, they're still probably going to be pretty damn good at golf. That's probably going to happen. So what you kind of want is this, in a way, right? Because now, and what you brought up last week, and I think is a really good point, now that these guys played really well at Augusta, they're thinking, oh, I didn't have to go over here for guaranteed money. I could still make my money and make my living here on the PGA Tour. But now here I am, and I've ruined my reputation, you know? Yeah. A perfect example of this is Brooks Koepka, who we were talking about last week.
Yep.
And not just any Brooks Koepka, but the Brooks Koepka that led the tournament for most of it. Obviously had a bit of a complete shutdown on Sunday in the fourth round, and that's kind of why Jon Rahm ended up winning the tournament. But led the tournament for most of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And showed that his health is back, right? And that was, I think, the main reason, and it's been pretty much documented, the main reason that he went to LIV is he didn't think that he had the health to continue to compete at the highest level of golf and make his money doing that. So he made the financial decision, which I, you know, would agree with in that kind of situation.
Yeah.
Maybe not with who you're getting your money from, but the decision to make the most money when you don't believe that you can earn it because you're not healthy enough. But now he's like, well, hey, I'm definitely healthy enough. I could come back. I think a lot of these guys are thinking this now, you know?
I don't know that I think a lot of them are thinking that, because I think Brooks is the only one who genuinely left because of injury. I think the other guys left because of age, and I think Bryson was scared. I think Patrick Reed was scared. I think Phil Mickelson kind of excluded himself almost. Mm-hmm. And I think, honestly, I do. I think Brooks is the only person who genuinely left because he was worried about his injuries. And we've been seeing bits and pieces of things come out about it in the past few days. And I genuinely do think it's going through his head. Like, I think he's at a coin flip right now, to be honest, on whether he wants to come back or not. Like, I think that's what it's going to come down to, because you get tied for second at the Masters and you realize that it's only because you just played bad. Like, it's not like his injuries came into play and that's why he lost. It's literally just he had a bad round. He very easily could have won this. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a probably more than 50% chance we see him on the PGA Tour again.
Yeah, no, I think there's more than like a 75% chance that we see Brooks Koepka on the PGA Tour again. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that kind of just sees out the end of his contract with LIV and immediately attempts to come back. Now, again, we talked about this last week, how the PGA Tour handles it is going to be very fragile because, and this is something that I think I said to someone while I was watching the Masters and watching Brooks do his thing. I turned to somebody and I said, I think golf is arguably better when Brooks Koepka is good. Now, it's been pretty well documented on this podcast that I'm not necessarily a Brooks Koepka kind of guy. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think he's a bit arrogant for me, but I think golf is just better when he's good and when he's playing the best in the world and when he's playing at his best and it's a major and he's doing exactly what he does on majors. He just shows up and just golfs his ass off just to probably win a major and then not golf again. Like, when Brooks is Brooks, golf benefits from it. And I think this is a perfect example. I mean, he didn't get the win, no. But for most of the tournaments, he was perfect Brooks Koepka. He was doing exactly what Brooks Koepka does, and that's show up for majors, always have a chance of winning one,
yeah,
and plays his ass off and dominates.
Yeah.
What do you think about that? Do you think that golf is for the better when Brooks is playing his best?
I do, and it's because of the type of athlete that I like to watch. I think there's, I mean, obviously there's three types of athletes, at least in my opinion. There's the incredibly humble athletes who you're never going to hear them talk shit. You're never going to hear them really say anything. They're just going to lead by example and play really well and do what they do. You got the guys in the middle who, in my opinion, are the worst athletes, the ones who occasionally will talk shit only when they're playing well. And then you got the guys who are always going to talk shit. And they're my favorite to watch. Because even if they're blowing it or they're playing like shit, they're still talking shit. Those are the best guys to watch, in my opinion. And that's what Brooks is. And he brings that element to golf, which there isn't otherwise, because no one else does that. And I think that's why it helps make golf a little bit better, because we get something different. Mm-hmm. We have the class of Scotty. We have the class of Rory, the class of JT. Like, all these guys are full class. They're all fairly humble. They don't really, I've never heard Scotty, JT, or Rory talk shit except for like about LIV. And
Ryder Cup. I would say the Ryder Cup is probably the most shit talking you'll see them do. And that's amongst
which is different because it's country versus country or country, whatever it is. But like, the guys that always talk shit are the most entertaining to me to watch. And the guys who think they're the best at all times are the best to me to watch. I mean, who's the most exciting linebacker that we've seen in our lifetime? Ray Lewis. And he was talking shit all the fucking time.
Nonstop.
He backed it up all the time, but he was always talking shit. And he was exciting to watch. And we don't get that with golf. And Brooks brings that aspect to golf. Whether you like him or whether you hate him, he brings a change of pace, which, whether you recognize it or not, is interesting.
Right.
So to me, I do enjoy it. And I think it is better when he's playing well, because it's always nice to see them actually able to back up their shit talk.
Yeah. I mean, especially because he's one of the people that can back up his shit talk pretty much anytime that when he's healthy, clearly he can just flip a switch and out of nowhere be dominant. Like,
yeah,
he's probably healthy for the first time in at least two seasons. And he won the LIV Orlando. And he led the Masters for most of it. And those are two completely different type of events, right? The whole title on Brooks Koepka forever has been, oh, he only shows up for majors. Well, LIV Orlando is not a major, W, and the Masters is a major, almost W, other than the fact that Augusta chewed him up and swallowed him. You know, it happens to a lot of great golfers.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure everybody's seen this meme at this point, but I don't know if I, like, I don't know if I can believe anyone trying to tell me that they weren't excited to see the memes about Brooks when he was like, I don't know who won the Masters last year, but I know I'm winning it this year, because like, he almost did. Like, you imagine like what would have happened if he did win? Like, that thing would have been all over that clip what's it called?
Full swing.
Full swing. Yeah. It would have been everywhere if he had pulled it out, and he almost did. And that's the kind of stuff that's exciting, when guys call their shot like that. And obviously he didn't get it, but like he was close.
He was really close to doing it, you know? That was, I mean, I saw the memes circulating and I was like, I completely forgot that he said that on the documentary.
And I get, right? I get like, if you're pissed off about him being cocky about it like that, but when he almost, when he comes that close to backing it up, like, I mean, you can't do anything but give the guy props in that situation. No.
Arguably, the fact that you can call your shot like that, when that documentary was going on, you were still going through your health problems. You were still pretty much in the lowest point of your career. It was made clear through the documentary that you were at your mental lowest in your entire career.
Yeah.
And you still had the nuts to say that to a camera?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, I don't know who wanted this last year, but I'm going to this year. I remember watching that and being like, the fuck you are? And then here we go. And it's Sunday of the Masters. He has a 3-shot lead. And it's like, oh, hey, ain't that some shit?
Yeah.
It was kind of like, you want to hate it because it's associated with Liv. You really want to hate it. You do. But damn it, if it's not entertaining. And what are professional sports meant to be if not entertaining, right?
Yeah.
Everybody sometimes gets lost in that. Like I do all the time. You get lost in the fact that professional sports is just for the sake of entertainment. If you're not being entertained, don't bother, you know?
Exactly.
That was entertaining. That was more entertaining than I would say since the Tiger winning the Masters. And
it was up there for sure.
Arguably Phil winning the PGA Championship at that age, that was also entertaining.
That was pretty good.
But that was perfect. I mean, you have a major, you have a guy that decided to go somewhere else to make more money in that major, winning it for most of the time. And he's like, everybody's like, he's back, like he's healthy again. And now he kind of goes away. And this is going to be my kind of follow-up question into this, right? So now he's going away. He's going back to Liv. We will not be seeing him at another PGA event until the next major. What now? Do you think people are going to be watching? You think people are going to be watching the Liv tour more seriously now, seeing what the Liv guys were able to accomplish at the Masters?
No, I don't.
I don't think so either.
I honestly don't. It was obviously exciting to watch them do it, and you saw them still show that they can compete. But at the same time, it's harder to watch. It's not as easily accessible as the PGA Tour is at this point. And there's only a few big names
right
at this point. Like there's the Brooks, there's P. Reed, there's Bryson DeChambeau, there's Phil Mickelson, there's Dustin Johnson. There's these big names there, Cam Smith, but there's only a handful of them. There's not dozens of them like on the PGA Tour. Like the kind of person who watches golf on a regular basis, and by regular basis, I'll say watches a tournament once a month, can probably name you 20 plus PGA Tour golfers. Probably can only name you the 6 that I just named on the Live Tour, though. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Right. So for that reason, I don't think so, but we'll see what happens.
And I would argue the biggest reason, right? Like, even if somebody was like, wow, these guys are really exciting to watch, I wouldn't mind watching more Live Golf.
Yeah.
Wait, what channel can I watch that on? Everybody knows that you can watch pretty much any Sunday golf round on the PGA Tour on CBS.
Yeah.
There's pretty much always going to be on CBS, especially if it's one of the bigger events. Even small events on Sundays get televised on CBS, right? You pretty much have that in the back of your mind at all times, in your back pocket. Somebody asks you, where are you watching Live golf tournaments? Where are you watching the most important Live rounds? I would argue to say maybe Rick and I can answer the question because we had to report that news when it happened. But most other people aren't going to be able to tell you that it's on the CW, right? Yeah. And then you have to find which CW channel you have.
Because a lot of people are going to be like, what's CW? Do I even have that channel? Is that included in my package?
Right. The only reason a lot of Philadelphians will know the CW is because of CW Philadelphia. Like that used to be where people got their news before Lake 6 ABC, et cetera, in this area. I'm assuming that's not the case for everywhere in the country, right? So some people are not going to have any idea what the CW is.
Yeah.
You know, they had such a good thing with that YouTube TV deal. The fact that they didn't re-sign with YouTube TV.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't do that. Because YouTube TV is like the thing right now.
Yeah.
I don't know why they didn't say that.
Right. I would argue to say that more people have YouTube TV than have maybe like Hulu even. Like I would say more people have it.
I would say, to be a little specific, more people in their target audience probably have YouTube TV than have cable TV.
100%.
Because their target audience is people our age in their 20s and maybe a little bit younger. Do you have cable? I don't have cable.
I have YouTube TV, though.
Exactly. I don't have YouTube TV, but like I have other streaming services. Like I don't have cable, though. Like kids our age and people our age don't have cable. I keep calling us kids. We're not kids anymore, and it sucks. But
yeah, it's weird. But like realistically, we are, and you're perfectly right. We are that target audience for them.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, ooh, golf is fun. We got teams. We got guys' names that you know. We only play a couple of holes every 8 weeks. It's not every week, and there's no cuts, and we're new and
exciting.
We got
these cool graphics on the TV because kids like graphics.
26-year-olds are going to love this. You can find it on the CW. Yeah, that's right. I don't think I have that in my YouTube TV package. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't know why you would either. I think the only people that still have the CW are my grandparents. Okay, and that might be it. I don't know.
I think my parents still have it.
Yeah, see, well, people that have cable, you know, that's...
Exactly.
Like, this kind of is funny in hindsight because you looked at that CW deal and you're like, oh, I mean, it's a lot of money to have associated with a television network. That makes a lot of sense for an up-and-coming and budding league to do. Makes a lot of sense, right? Then you look back on it in hindsight and you're like, oh, now that people might want to watch the product because your golfers performed very well at the Masters, it's now almost impossible for your target demographic to watch it. Incredibly funny.
No one's going out and paying to get cable to watch the Live Tour. It's not happening.
I gotta tell you, that's an incredibly PGA Tour kind of fuck up. I mean, that just oozes PGA Tour type of levels.
You became the very thing you swore to destroy.
You were told you would defeat the Sith, not join them. It's a very Star Wars moment for this for golf now. That's hilarious. That's so good. Oh man. To kind of get away from the Live conversation, but you know, I feel like it was important for us to talk about it. I feel like it was just something that by Sunday everybody was like, I mean,
it's a relevant topic.
Screwed. Yeah,
that's a relevant topic,
which was huge for them. I would say another relevant topic, though, is the emergence / welcome to the tour party for Sam Bennett, the amateur heard around the world, coming out hot, starting his Masters experience, birdie eagle, 3 under through 2 holes at the Masters, which is absolutely insane for anyone to do, let alone an amateur who's never played the course professionally. Obviously he had his practice rounds, but other than that, like, he's never this is not like his second or third Masters, you know. It was giving Will Zalatoris vibes, who we'll get into, by the way. And he continued to show his skill and abilities as the first amateur with ads on his hat at the Masters, by the way, because of the NIL deals, which is kind of funny.
Yeah.
He showed us on day one that he could compete at the Masters with a 4 under on day one, and then turned right around and did it again in day two, went 4 under again. He's now 8 under and in third place at the Masters behind Brooks Koepka. And I believe at the time, by this time it was John Rahm. And, you know, Victor Hovland was there biting on the heels. And then he decided to get a little bit too cocky, right? I'm going to give him some props to have the balls to say this.
Oh, yeah.
But after his second round, he did his little post-round presser, which actually amateurs don't get too often. So that was probably a really cool experience that he was asked. Because they usually don't get them. And now you would think, right, this is your first Masters, this is your first major professional event, right? They're asking you to get in front of the microphone. You might want to pay respects to the course that you've watched since you were a kid, walk on eggshells, you know, try to be the utmost golf professional you can try to be. No. Bennett said to hell with that. I might be a low amateur on paper. I'm not a low amateur in my head. He pretty much the way he went about this post round press conference is he had it in his eyes. You could tell he's like, I mean, I came here to win the Masters. I'm not just here because I'm an amateur and I'm just excited to play. I'm here to win the Masters, which arguably is fucking awesome. Love that energy. But he did say, quote, the championship golf courses, I mean, Ridgewood, it's harder than this place. I'll tell you that. Ridgewood being another one of the, I believe, one of the courses that does one of the Korn Ferry events. I mean, and then he went on to say, quote, they wouldn't let my agent get credentialed this week. I don't think they're caught up with the NIL stuff. I don't know, but I thought that was weird. So now you're poking the bear that is Augusta National Golf Course. And I don't know if that's, I mean, there's worse bears to poke, obviously, like an actual bear. I don't suggest it. You might want to stay away from that. But
yeah,
one of my top five bears to not poke is Augusta National Golf Course. And it decided, you want to know what, Sam? We had a good little run there. It's over. Round three plus four completely deleted one of his days. And then in the fourth and final round, he went plus two to finish up the Masters at two under. Not awful, right? You still finished two under. You were in the top 25. You were T 16? Yeah, you were T16 amongst a bunch of professionals. Still an incredible experience that you got to have. But right when you were in the mix, in the top five, you were right there. You were up with those. You were rubbing elbows with John Rahm and Brooks Koepka, two of the arguably best golfers in the last half decade to a decade, or at least two of the top 10 best golfers in that time span that you've watched growing up, right? You're up there with them. Now you're feeling yourself a little bit. They want you to speak in front of the microphone. You're the first amateur to play at the Masters to have ad deals. You're getting paid whether you win this thing or not, baby, right? Yeah, and then the Masters said, not today, Sonny. So what was your entire experience with the Sam Bennett thing? Did you enjoy the ride? Were you kind of like, he's a little too cocky for me? How are you feeling?
I mean, like I said, I enjoy a cocky athlete. I think there's a reason that they get to the point they're at, and it's because they're all cocky. You have to have that level of confidence to get to the level that they're all at. But you also have to know when not to say anything. And that was just one of those situations where you just don't say anything and you just quietly do your thing. Because as an amateur, you're not getting paid if you win anyway. So why are you talking?
That's true.
Just do your thing and get your name out there. You know what I mean? So,
which arguably
I
mean,
I enjoyed
it.
I enjoyed watching amateurs do well. We enjoyed Will Zalatoris a few years ago doing well. I enjoyed watching this. Do I wish he won? Kind of. Am I also glad he didn't win? Also, yes.
Yeah, you're almost torn a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Amateur wins, that's arguably one of the coolest stories.
That would be awesome to see in person.
Tournament. Yeah. And then if an amateur wins, that means all the other guys like don't, and you know, it kind of takes a little bit of the shine away. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like for example, John Rahm winning is great to see, right? That's now his second major. You could kind of be on Grand Slam watch now if he continues to play the way he is. He's been fantastic for the last 2 years. He himself has said the only reason he ever got out of the top in the world spot is because Scottie Scheffler A caught fire, and B, he was in the middle of club changes to a totally different team in Callaway. And now he's back to being the spicy Spaniard. Like, John Rahm's fully back and he's winning majors again, which is huge for golf, huge for John Rahm, because, by the way, we're almost older than him. Are we older than him? Is he? I think he might be just a bit older than us, buddy, but I think,
makes me
if
sad.
I'm not mistaken, yes. So he's a bit older than us. He was born in November of 1994, so he's 28. I'm 26, almost 27, and you're 25, almost 26.
Yes.
We would have went to high school with this guy if we lived in the same town.
The thing that makes me sad about growing up is it feels weird to cheer for people who are younger than you.
Right?
It's not talked about enough how weird that is.
Like, I'm not...
Like, we're out here, like, cheered for a 19-year-old to do something that we couldn't even fathom doing. No. That we wouldn't even be able to dream about what it was like to do, because there's no way for us to even start to picture how to do it. Mm-hmm. And we're just, like, cheering them on, and, like, our entire Sunday is dedicated to watching this person potentially do something important. And
yeah.
It's not talked about enough how weird that is. I'm still going to do it, but it's not talked about enough how weird it is. The fact that, like in other sports, like we just wear their names on our backs.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I have, you know, my fiance, and actually you as well, you have Bryson Stott jerseys. I would like to remind you, Bryson Stott can't legally drink.
Remind me of that.
It's weird.
Don't remind me of that, because he looks like more of a man than I do. And he's so young.
But he's got so 10 game hitting streak right now. He's also a menace.
He's hitting over 400 right now. Like, how do I not cheer for him? But like,
he's on 10 game hitting streak, and why? He's stolen 5 bags.
It's weird.
Are you the new Trey Turner? I thought we traded for the real one.
Still gonna do it, but like, it's weird.
Hey man, look, Jalen Hurts, quarterback of the Philadelphia Eagles, somebody most of the city of Philadelphia spends almost all their winters thinking about. 24 years old.
You know what? You know what's really weird? It's not as weird when people are like into the season and you're like cheering them on, like, this is great. Like, I love watching this. Like, whatever. Like, your team is doing well. It's your team. That's why you're cheering. It's not specifically for this 19-year-old, even though it kind of is sometimes. But
right.
But the thing that boggles my mind is, like, when draft season comes around, and we're going to get it in like 2.5 weeks with the NFL draft, when people's teams don't draft the 18-year-old that they wanted on their team so badly, and they get physically angry about the fact that they didn't get who they wanted. It's like, this kid could be your child, and they're not. They're just someone else's child. And in any other scenario, it's weird.
Right.
But sports, it's not.
Think about this. The next superstar in most professional sports, like the next it guy in most professional sports, was born after the year 2000.
Yeah, it's weird.
I don't, like, their birth year should not start with the number 2.
Yeah.
It just shouldn't. It shouldn't. Like, Bryson Stott was born in 2002.
That's a problem.
I don't like that. I was like making little arts and craft projects in 2002. I have little Christmas tree ornaments that I made that have 2002 written on the back, and that's when he was born.
Yeah.
I don't like it. It makes me upset, but hey, this is just professional sports nowadays. We digress. Well, the last thing we're going to talk about with the Masters, obviously an incredible, incredible performance from Jon Rahm. It was basically a full-blown masterclass. I really believe the only one beating Jon Rahm, and the reason that he wasn't in the lead the entire time, was himself. He was getting upset with himself. He was getting upset with his caddy, especially day one and a little bit into day two, before he kind of like it's like he took a moment and was like, oh, right, I'm Jon Rahm. Forgot about that a little bit, and then showed up and he just knew if he could keep pace with anybody, he would eventually catch them. And that's exactly what happened. I don't know what exactly happened with the Brooks Koepka fall apart. I'm not sure if it was just because it's Augusta National, or if the pressure was just a bit too much for him. But if you have a guy like Jon Rahm breathing down your neck, that's probably something on your mind, right? Oh, yeah, you got to be thinking about that.
Yeah, definitely. I think we talked about it before. If there was a PGA Tour Fight Club bracket style situation, it would probably be Jon Rahm and Brooks Koepka in the finals. So knowing that man is just there on your heels the whole time is terrifying. Whether it's going to get physical or not, it's still terrifying to know that he's just there.
Right. And if you are Brooks Koepka and you're in round 4 of the Masters, where you now have a 2-shot lead because you gave one back in round 3, he's charging. You're falling behind at this point in the tournament. Yeah. And now you're in the same group as him, and you're looking at the number one official world golf ranked player right now, arguably the best guy on the PGA Tour as we speak. And you are just now getting healthy again. You're just now getting back to being the best golfer that you can be. You're like, I haven't played competition like this.
Yeah, it'll get in your head for a long time.
It's got to get in your head, right? Because this dude's on an absolute tear, and he's coming right for you. And I'm not going to say that's the main reason for the Brooks Koepka fall apart, because I think that there were a couple different reasons. I think he got in his head a little bit there in round four, especially when it came to his putting and kind of closing out holes. But you got to think that John Rahm got in his head a little bit, and that's maybe what makes John Rahm so good is his – he almost demands you to focus on him, even if you're one of the golfers competing against him. He demands your focus. He's like, no, I'm John Rahm. I will catch up to you, and I will beat you. Watch this.
You better not trip, because I will I will catch you if you do.
Like,
that's exactly what happened.
If you're Brooks Koepka, you're looking behind your shoulder at all times, because you know he's just made a stroke up on you. Now he's just made two. Mm-hmm. He's made – and now he's passed you.
Yep.
Good luck catching up to him, too, because he's now just caught fire.
Yep.
Right? Like – he's a scary individual to golf against, right? And he's got the Rambo course reader pages in his back pocket. Out of his
back pocket.
Right, like, you pretty much have Sylvester Stallone's Rambo character in a golfer tracking you down for an entire golf round. That's petrifying. Right? Like, how do you compete against that? And I would argue that that's the reason John Rahm is so good at what he does. Have you seen anything different? Like, what is your main catalyst, do you think, for A, the Brooks Koepka fall apart, and B, the John Rahm victory?
I think John Rahm won it more than Brooks Koepka lost it, even though Brooks shot plus on the day. Like, he didn't have a great round, and there was guys shooting -7, -8. I think that he lost it more than John Rahm won it. No, John Rahm won it more than he lost it. Because, again, John Rahm got on fire. He four-putted the first hole. Like, you shouldn't be able to come back from that. And he did. And it gets in your head. I mean, think about when you're out with your buddies and you're doing any sort of format, match play, scramble, whatever. And you're, like, feeling good off the tee. And then you hit a shit shot and they hit a fantastic approach shot. You're like, that's in your head. Whether you want it to be or not, it's in your head. And that's exactly 100%. What happens there, because every single one of Brooks's tee shots on the back nine went either left or right into the pine straw. And John Rahm's, every single one of them went directly in the middle of the fairway. It's impossible to not think about that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was like John Rahm was on autopilot, and it was like, Brooks Koepka's plane not only didn't have autopilot, but one of the engines fell off.
Yeah, exactly.
And now he's got to pilot half a plane while John Rahm's taking a nap in the cockpit because the plane's doing all the work.
Pretty much, yeah.
It was insane to watch unfold, because you knew basically what was going through the two guys' heads. Like, for John Rahm, it was like, oh, I'm him, and I'm going to win this tournament.
Yeah.
And nobody's stopping me. And Brooks Koepka was like, oh my God, he's him. Nothing is stopping him right now. I can't figure this out.
Yeah.
Like, it's ridiculous. I mean, it was a masterclass. It is called the Masters, so, you know, arguably you want that to be what wins, but it was a masterclass of Sunday golf. It was arguably poetic to watch, because it's John Rahm. And one last thing before we, you know, move on and get to the end of the episode here. I think the way John Rahm handled himself in his post-round press conference was so professional and kind of awesome, because we all know what, you know, the opinions of John Rahm are. Like, he's fiery. He can sometimes be a bit too emotional for some of the older golfers. He yells at his caddy. He'll yell at himself on the course. He's not afraid to show his emotions 24/7, 100% of the time. And he got up there on that podium and wore that green jacket and presented a truly professional speech that I thought was incredible to watch all the way through. So honestly, fantastic win from John Rahm all the way around. Professionally done. Loved it. I'm not really like, I'm not saying I'm against John Rahm. It's just like, to me, there's always the Ryder Cup situation in my brain going on. Like, fair. I would rather Scotty win over you. I'd rather Scotty be number one in the world over you.
I'd rather a U.S. guy, a hometown guy. Yeah. 100%. And that's not unfair to think about.
No, but applause to John Rahm. I think he did an incredible job and handled it so professionally. To keep moving forward here, that was our Masters talk, obviously taking up most of the episode. We are going to wrap up the episode with a couple of news points here. We're going to start with the Will Zalatoris withdrawal prior to the Masters. Didn't even tee off at the Masters and wound up getting a back surgery for an injury that he had sustained, and he will be out for the rest of the year. Will Zalatoris was kind of a betting dark horse to win the Masters this year, and it was kind of wild to see him withdraw right out of the gate, not even tee off. And then all of a sudden he's got a surgery and he's out for the rest of the year. I don't think it's going to impact him too much just due to the fact that he is young still, you know, surgeries do happen, but a back surgery for a golfer can be something career altering.
Yeah.
Obviously with his youth, we're probably not thinking about this being career ending by any means, but How do you think this is going to impact the career of Will Zalatoris moving forward? Do you think that he's going to be even remotely the same guy?
I think he'll be close. He'll have to fix his swing. I mean, we've seen it with Tiger how many times now? He's had back surgeries. It's a little bit different, obviously, because he's so much younger. So it's mm-hmm. going to affect him differently than it is a 50-year-old dude like Tiger. But I don't think it's going to affect him that much. I think he's going to come back. He's going to be a little slow to start. But again, he's young, so he can take a year right after and kind of work his way back into it and not really strain himself too much. And he's still got the namesake. He's still got second in his first Masters tournament. Like, as long as he has that, which he's always going to have, he's always going to be one of those people. It's just like how in other sports, like, players can start to play like shit. But if they were a first-round draft pick 3 or 4 years ago, they're still going to get a new contract, whether they're playing like shit or not, just because of that draft capital. That's kind of where we're at with Zalatoris at this point. He has that reputation of he got second in his solo second in his first Masters appearance. So he's always going to be a guy that as long as he's in a tournament, he's going to be discussed a little bit.
Right. It's the Carson Wentz effect, right? Like Carson Wentz was in the talks for an MVP race and a Super Bowl winning year. He didn't win the Super Bowl, but he was arguably the MVP of the team during the regular season. So he's always going to get a new contract. Will Zalatoris is probably going to be the same way. And I totally agree with you. Yeah. He'll probably have to change his swing. It happens. Their back surgeries are a serious surgery, especially when it comes to a sport that involves a swinging motion. That is kind of the a rotation, major part of a swing. So it's definitely going to change things, and obviously he is young, so I don't see it impacting his swing too much. One last little wrinkle here could be injury-related. Rory McIlroy, who did not show up to the Masters even in the slightest, has wound up withdrawing from the RBC Heritage this week. I have yet to see what the reasoning is. I've looked at a couple different articles. I've seen a couple different posts. I have yet to see a why he withdrew. I'm just seeing that he did. If it is injury related, do you think that could explain his piss poor Masters performance?
I don't think his piss poor Masters performance was related to injury. I just think he doesn't want to win a Masters.
I mean,
it's hard to think about otherwise at this point. He just doesn't play well at the Masters. And I don't know if it's the course, if it's the hype around it or what, but he just doesn't play well at the Masters. And I don't know if we're ever going to see him play well at the Masters.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like it's almost every single time now. It's like, ooh, it's the Masters. It could be Rory's big break. He'll finally get the Grand Slam. And no, missed cut. Doesn't even get near it. You know, it's become a little frustrating as like a Rory kind of guy, because I don't support many European dudes, right? You know, your classic Shane Lowry, Rory McIlroy kind of follower here. But dude, eventually you have to do this, right?
Yeah.
If you're going to be the figurehead of the PGA Tour, if you're going to be the guy for the PGA Tour, you're going to have to get that grand.
Gotta get it done.
I mean, it does suck that the biggest explosion in his career was when he was leading the Masters by a handful of strokes and choked it all away.
Yeah.
Do you think that's just always going to be in the back of his mind? Is that the catalyst of this whole thing? Is that just like his only main memory from the Masters is exploding on Sunday?
I think it's just the pressure of winning the last major he needs to win. And it being the Masters, it's an incredibly highly touted tournament. Like, everybody dreams about winning it when they're a kid. So it's probably just the pressure gets to him. And I don't know how the best way for him to deal with that is, but he's got to figure it out at some point, because we need to see a Rory Masters win.
Yeah. I mean,
mostly because I need to see his Masters meal.
Right.
Which, by the way, super excited for John Rahm's next year.
Uh-huh. I hope it's like genuine Spanish food, because
it probably will be, and that's why I'm super excited to see what it is.
Yeah, like, unfortunately, I don't know what genuine Spanish food is. Yeah. I know what Tex-Mex is. I know what, like, Mexican food is. But I know those are completely different. So
yeah,
I'm interested to see the menu as well. And also, last little tidbit here before we get in the power rankings and wrap it up. We have finally figured out what Scotty's style is, folks. That's right. It is a burger slider with a pickle, tomato and lettuce, cheese, and French fries. That is what makes it the Scotty style, is that is topped with some beautiful American French fries. So I'll take my burger slider Scotty style any day of the week. Thank for you show. Very much. You know, for show, give me them Scotty sliders. I'll take them. But to move forward here into the RBC Heritage, which Rory will not be playing, let's talk about these power rankings. Obviously, we're coming off a bit of a Masters hangover, so some of the guys that are well-known aren't necessarily playing, but there are a lot of returning names in this tournament. Some surprising news from this power rankings here. We'll get into the top fives. We'll do the thing. But I just want to make some mentions of who's above the top five. But obviously, Rick, top five in no specific order. Are you ready?
Yeah, let's hear it.
All righty. Cameron Young, Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Colin Morikawa.
All right. First things first, before we wrap up, we got to talk about Cam Young. But my power rankings is going to be... I don't even remember who the names were. Can you read through them again? Sorry, I got distracted thinking about Cam Young.
Cameron Young, Scottie Scheffler, Patrick Cantlay, Matt Fitzpatrick, and Colin Morikawa.
I'm going to go Cantlay, Morikawa. No, Cantlay, Fitzpatrick, Morikawa, Scheffler, Young.
I mean, close. You got Morikawa right, smack dab in the middle. You did mix up Scheffler and Cantlay there. But let's get into it. Number five, Matty Fitz, the braced face wonder. It says here, well, that was encouraging. The Brit was one of two to score par or better in every round of the Masters before checking up for a T10. It's obviously a positive sign that he's adjusting to the pain triggered by a bulging disc in his neck. T4 among three top 15s at Harbortown. I actually had no idea that he was coming off injury, to be honest with you. So,
yeah,
well, that's one hell of a performance of the Masters to have a disc neck issue.
Oh, yeah.
T10 with a neck problem? Good on you, Matty Fitz. Good on you. Yeah, surprise he's playing, especially with the Zalatoris back surgery and all that. So, good on him. I could agree with the five there.
Yeah.
Number four, Scottie Scheffler. He's in just his fourth season on tour, but he's still a little strange when he makes a tournament debut. That's the reality this week, and it's no bother to the exceptionally quick study. Settled for a T10 in his title defense of the Masters, 10 straight top 12 finishes upon a ride. 10 straight top 12s.
That's wild.
What are we even talking about here? That's ridiculous.
It's a lock.
He doesn't even know what losing golf is like at this point. 10 in a row? That's nutty. Number three, arguably I'd move him up this list, by the way. Number three, Colin Morikawa. Given his skill set as one of the best ball strikers on the planet, he could play a game of catch me if you can and endure little stress. He's already 3-for-3 with a T7 in 2021 and a scoring average of 69, nice, in 12 rounds, held on for a T10 at the Masters for his fifth top 15 of 2023. I forgot how many dudes were T10 at the Masters.
Yeah.
There's like a whole
There was a lot of similar scores this week.
Yeah. Colin Morikawa's coming. He's had a pretty good season so far. I remember last year was pretty ugly what we were seeing out of him, but it's good to see him back on the horse. And this is definitely a tournament, given his history here at this golf course, that he could up and win and kind of get back on the true saddle of, like, I'm one of the young guns everybody should be worried about.
Yeah.
Number two, Cameron Young. One of my favorite guys, mostly because he's sponsored by Major League Baseball. Right on, baby. If he has an Achilles heel, it's consistency with his putter, but that's neutralized when greens are small, and they are this week. T3 in his debut here last year when he opened with a field low 63, rose for a T7 in his second Masters last week. Cameron Young. Yeah, definitely a Masters story, Cameron Young.
Yeah. Played really well.
Played incredibly well, and not a guy that you really saw in any of, you know, the pre-Masters rankings. Wasn't really a guy that was being talked about. You remember him being having that early success last season, kind of being one of those guys. Uh-huh. That was in the mix early, like with the Sam Burnses and all them guys last year. But I mean, he's definitely somebody to kind of be on Ryder Cup watch for, kind of one of those fringe earn it picks for the Ryder Cup. Could be a captain's pick depending on who's available to ZJ, you know. Number one for this one, the RBC Heritage, is Patty Ice. Patrick Cantlay wore maybe the worst fitting pants I have ever seen a man wear on Sunday at the Masters. A brutal pair of pants. In the absence of a red flag or a weakness, he's arguably the target at Harbortown. In five appearances, he's finished second once, T3 twice, and T7. He remains a regular presence on leaderboards, and he's still winless this season. Definitely interesting that Patrick Cantlay is winless this season with how often I feel like he's in the top 10 when he's like around the leaderboard. It's weird he doesn't have a win yet, you know?
Yeah, I think he's going to rip a few off at some point coming here soon.
He definitely has to. Like, he's going to be getting his wins coming up soon here because he's just playing some damn good golf, and he's always pretty much in the mix. And this could definitely be a tournament that he winds up winning. But what I wanted to mention before we wrap up here, number 14 at the RBC Heritage Power Rankings. And very, very unlike our boy Rob Bolton, who did write this article, John Rahm, number 14 in the power rankings at the RBC Heritage after getting a green jacket this last week.
Interesting.
I don't know if Rob has listened to our critiques or if maybe, just maybe, he actually watched some golf instead of reading a leaderboard. But he didn't pick back-to-back winners for, you know, maybe the first time in quite some time, especially a winner after a major. Feels like after every major, the next week is guaranteed Rob's going to be like, yep, boop, winning this week too.
Yep, for sure.
I mean, it says here, he's back to number one in the world with his mammoth achievement of winning the Masters, which is his seventh title worldwide in 12 months, but it's fair to anticipate a letdown. However, in his only trip to Harbortown in June of 2020, he led the field in total distance of putts made. I understand that that's not like a huge stat line for a tournament, but he did just win the Masters. Let's not forget that. So definitely interesting to see him at number 14 on this list.
Yeah, but I mean, top 10 even maybe.
Yeah, but you know, hey, if he's learning, if Rob is learning from his mistakes in the past, I'll take it.
Yeah.
All right, Rick, buddy, in our Masters reaction episode, I believe this is going to do it unless you have any other golf news for us.
No, just the fact that I hate Cameron Young because he can go to a baseball game whenever he wants to.
Whenever he wants to. His sponsorship with Major League Baseball means that he can just attend any baseball game he wants to. Also, anybody in the Baseball Hall of Fame can do so as well. They get a little gold card that has their name on it. But, yeah, it's crazy how he got that too, right? That he just was a part of the same golf club as you know, the commissioner of baseball. Yeah. Good for you, Cam. Way to just get blessed with not only
called networking. Golf game. Look it up.
That is a beautiful job of networking, it must be said. Yeah. But that's going to do it for this episode of From the Tips. If we miss anything, if you guys thought there were some big stories from the Masters that maybe we didn't get to, feel free to reach out to us on our socials on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Hit us up on either of those. Comment or hit us up on the DMs. We will answer. We'll talk about it next week if you want us to, or we'll just answer it there on the spot. Totally up to you, however you want it.
If we miss something, we'll totally talk about it again. But go ahead and please follow us on those two socials again, on Instagram at @FromTheTips_pod and on Twitter at @FTT_pod. Please and thank you. And as always, thank you so, so much for listening, and we out.
Thanks, guys. See you later.